And so we just talk from our heart, because that's where God is. So we just talk from our God part, huh? And guess who's going to be sharing her thoughts with us tonight? Our Katie Lawton.
Holy smoke. And here we have the dilemma of middle age. If I can see my notes, I can't see you. I think I'm going to look for the notes tonight. Thank you so much for coming. You guys are the community of my heart. And you have loved me through impossible times. You have made it possible to leave you and come back. You've made it possible to change my mind. Those are gifts beyond price. And if I can give you a little bit back of what you've given me, then I'll be pleased with tonight. Mm-hmm. Millie asked me to talk a couple of months ago toward the end of class night when I said to her I'd been sitting in class and the strangest Bible verse had popped into my head. I don't walk around having Bible verses pop into my head, so if it's happening, it means something. And this is the Bible verse. This is from 1 Corinthians 13, but not the ones you hear at weddings. This is verses 11 and 12. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now, we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know, even as also I am known. What does it mean? Well, any of you, oops, you know, brought the tape recorder. Probably be a good idea if I turned it on, huh? That's the example for the evening. Oh, no. This is hard enough the first time. Why that verse? Because I sat in class this year and watched us grow in understanding over time. And it wasn't the kind of understanding that I'm used to. I have a lot of education, and if you're educated, understanding comes from books. You're given homework, you're given reading assignments, you take tests, you write reports on them. That's another kind of knowing. And it seemed to me that St. Paul in Corinthians was writing about the kind of knowing that we come to in church. The kind of knowing where we assume we understand the world, and then something happens, and we see that we don't yet. Mm-hmm. Now, these verses can also sound kind of harsh, like we're supposed to put away childish things. I don't think we ever do that fully. I don't ever want to fully. But I want to be open to understanding things in a new way. And you guys, and particularly Millie's classes, have taught me that it's safe to do that. That is an enormous gift. Again, I come from an academic background. I've studied clinical psychology. I have sort of a PhD level education, and that's a lot of footnotes and a lot of experts and a lot of tests. Mm-hmm. But it isn't the kind of knowing that's relevant when I sit with you guys in Millie's class. I've been in class off and on for about 3 years. I've spoken at Forum, but not when it's been here. We were back over at the Swedenborgian, so it's been a long time. And I sat in class this year and watched things happen that I didn't see or understand or perceive before. People have talked for years in this church about hearing or seeing spirit. Well, I've heard your stories, and you've given me enough accurate information that I know that what you're perceiving is real. Millie calls that knowing that you know. Well, tonight's talk is called The Sacrament of I Don't Know. The subtitle might be Knowing That You Know That You Don't Know. So do with that what you will. Don't mean to be sacrilegious. But sometimes in those classes, when we open ourselves to spirit, at least in the beginning, it's a matter of tolerating not knowing. For anybody who hasn't been in class, and I know we have some faces here tonight who don't look familiar, so I'm going to go ahead and explain it a little bit. I brought a friend who hasn't been to church with us before, has heard stories, but we'll go through some of it. We sit together in a dark room, and we invite spirit to use us. And spirit, in this case, doesn't mean being possessed by something. That's straight out of TV. It doesn't mean opening to something negative. It means opening ourselves to love and to that which wishes to communicate through us. What makes it safe to do is that we're in a community of people. There are rules for how to do this safely and well. For example, we're led by Millie, who does it with great love and with great ethical care. Just inviting spirit to come in all by yourself might not be the wisest or safest approach, but here, where Millie leads it and where you can watch other people do it. You know, hearing voices is not considered a mark of sanity in most parts of the culture. And yet you guys are very demonstrably sane. So if you're going to hear voices, well, maybe my hearing voices or perceiving spirit doesn't mark me out as nuts. That's useful. If I'm going to try something, I'd like to know I can come back from it. I'd like to know it's safe, and I'd like to know it's good. Well, all those things get demonstrated in Millie's classes. So why do we do this? Well, this is a spiritualist church. One of the things that makes us different than most churches is making ourselves available to spirit. I think lots of churches do this in different ways. We do it by practicing the gifts that are promised in the Bible, including healing and including bearing messages, which is called prophecy in the Bible. We do it really well. We do it, some of us have been doing it for 20 years. Some of us have been doing it for 10 minutes. And there's room for both kinds here. The other thing we're all encouraged to do, whether giving or receiving a message, is to run it through our God selves. In other words, just because somebody says it and says it comes from spirit, we don't ask anybody to swallow that whole. If it doesn't feel right, we don't take it in. And nobody's offended by that. This is a community of discernment where you're allowed to know what's right and correct for you. And you know what? Even in the same circle, we don't see the same thing. The other thing is we don't all access spirit in the same way. Some of us literally see it. We see energy changes. We see face changes. We use our eyes in some fashion. Some of us hear it. We hear voices. We have words pop into our heads in strange ways that we know is from spirit because it's so different than our own awareness or reality that we know it's not from us. Some of us feel it. Electricity or love or warmth or cold or fog or pain. You know, if all of a sudden I came in feeling fine and I have an outrageous pain in my hip, that is not coming from me. We'll get to why spirit uses those tools to communicate with us. Anyway, so that's how spirit does it. Class is about learning how to make ourselves accessible to that, and sometimes how to share with each other what it was we think that just happened. This is not like a class where you sit down and you get through a logical progression. We get what we get, and we don't know ahead of time. Sometimes we get an inkling. But it's not controlled, and it's not bidden. We're simply opening ourselves to it. And sometimes I understand what's going on around me, and sometimes I don't have a clue. And I decided in trying to understand that there were two kinds of I don't know that we can talk about tonight. One is the kind of I don't know that comes from not having all the facts. So we can go Google it, or look it up, or ask somebody. That's really not the kind of I don't know I'm talking about tonight, because we can do that out in the regular world. The kind of I don't know I'm talking about is, oh, this is bigger than I am. I'm in a human body and a human mind, and the limits of my understanding are defined sometimes by that. My phrase for this is, I don't know, but I'm curious. And lots of what happened in class this year left me with, I don't know, but I'm curious. I have always in my life had a powerful drive to try and understand God. Good luck, huh? My first experience with God was in a traditional Episcopal church where I was brought up. My dad is an agnostic. My mom and grandmother attended it, partly because it was the correct thing to do. In the 1950s, where you went to church was a measure of your class and background. And so I went to Sunday school. That was fine. I learned the things my culture tells me God is. I learned about things like Jesus who loves me and Ten Commandments and useful vocabulary. But I don't think I had an experience of God until the day that for some reason I walked into the stairwell, and this would have been very young, I'm guessing kindergarten, and I got hit by a beam of light, and I knew that was God. Now, had anybody ever talked to me about God as light? I don't think so. That's not inside your standard Christian vocabulary. I wasn't in particular pain. I wasn't in fear. There was nothing to explain why that happened then. But incidents like that have happened all my life, and I have become a quester. I grew up, as I said, in the Episcopal Church. When I could choose for myself later in my life, I tried attending Quaker meeting for a while, because Quakers listen very hard for the spirit within. And sometimes I do better if I'm allowed to follow my leadings than if I'm told what to do. No reactions here. Ah, you know me. I was a Unitarian for a while. I love their social activism, but talk about staying in your intellect. For me, it wasn't a satisfying contact with God. We could talk about it until we were blue in the face. We could pray to whom it may concern. But that wasn't for me an experience of God. I guess I'm learning as I take this spiritual journey that I need both a head experience and a heart experience and a spirit experience. And so anything that only offers one of those is only going to nourish and teach me for a while. After the Unitarians, I came here for a bit. At a very difficult time in my life, I got involved with a group of people who were going to help me blend the two loves of my life, which is psychology, the understanding of people, and spirituality, the understanding of God or source or essence. I really don't care what we call it. Dilemma, these people turned out to be a religious cult, and it took a dark period in my life and made it almost impossible. And I was hospitalized for a while and encountered yet another form of spirituality, which is the 12 steps. And for anybody who's not familiar with those were originated to help alcoholics who were written off at that time as helpless. They were going to die. And one very wise psychiatrist had said to them, the only hope I know for people in your condition is that you have a spiritual conversion experience. And these people, I think, took dictation from spirit and set out guidelines for how to have a conversion experience so that you could find and keep God and your sobriety. Well, I'm not an alcoholic. That's not what I needed help with. But this cult had defrauded me of every cent I owned and had done it in the name of God. I needed a God who wasn't somebody else's God. I needed a God I could feel and trust and believe and rant at. And the wording of one of those 12 steps says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And it also, every time it used the word God, said God as we understand God. It also uses words like putting myself into the care of God. Well, you know what? That's a God I could wrap my mind around. It didn't violate me, and that had to be the first condition. Having been so badly violated, I had to find a concept that at least didn't take away more. I needed to come back to life. And it's been a long, hard journey. That was about 4 years ago. Been back here. Been studying with you guys, and also have studied shamanism in the meantime. Spiritualism and shamanism have a lot in common. We'll cover that some other time. Spirit is what spirit is. Okay, obviously with my history, I now have to have criteria for knowing if a spiritual path is a safe one. And I ran into an author who actually wrote some criteria, which I thought I'd share with you in case you decide to try any of the strange things that are out there. Oh, yeah. The first of those is look at its historic record. How has it impacted the world? If it's legitimate, it's been around a while, and it's had a good impact on the world. That's a good first check. Second check. I guess we could say the impact on the world now, not just the historic one. This is the biblical quote, by their fruits ye shall know them. I've had one of you quote that to me about watching people develop here at this church. Even if what we do seems to be odd, look at the fruits of it. We watch people get loved and healthy and safe and connected. If that isn't the fruits of the Spirit, if that isn't good, I don't know what is. And the last one is verification via subjective experience. You know what Millie calls that? Run it through your God self. What's it look like to you? Measure it, try it on, test it. Don't swallow anything on somebody else's word. And please, if they insist they have the only access to truth, run. I didn't, and I have paid a very, very high price for that. Okay, so what do we mean when we say we know something? We looked at I don't know, now let's look at know. Well, most of us, when we talk about knowing something, mean it in an intellectual sense. I know a fact. The sun probably will come up tomorrow morning. If I drive north, I will hit Los Angeles, maybe. On a good day. Anybody who's seen kids over time, particularly in the elementary school years, watches them change in their intellect. The one example I'm going to give you, because I'm trained in child development, is the example that a Swiss child psychologist developed. His name was Piaget. And if he gave very, very little kids this amount of water and poured it into different things, if he poured it into a long, tall, skinny glass versus a short, wide one, every single little kid thought there was more water in the tall glass. It's the same water. He poured it from one to the next, but there was absolutely no kid at a certain level of cognitive, intellectual development who can get that. 1 year later, every single kid gets it right. And they think they never could have gotten it wrong. They can't remember that they did. They're sure they never got fooled by that. But that's their brain. And you can try and teach the younger ones all you want to. They cannot get it yet. They are not ready for the concept. So I didn't know, probably until the PhD program in psychology, how much developing we do in adulthood. I don't know about you guys, but I thought once I attained sort of adult height and sort of adult, I could buy liquor or drive a car or vote, that I must be developed. Nice try. And maybe not so much in the mental department. That was developed pretty firmly, pretty early on for me. I'm one of those people who likes to read and study and know, and so that was a pretty strong muscle group for me already. But there's more than one muscle group involved in knowing. How about our hearts? If we know whether a fact is true with our head by whether we can measure it empirically, how do we know something is true at an emotional level? Well, we use our feelings for that. And aren't you glad you're not still in high school? You remember that when you had a pimple on your face or somebody didn't want to go out with you or you flunked a test, you were sure your life was over? Or you didn't have the right clothes? Or you couldn't make the first string? That's emotional reasoning, and it's a wonderful guide, but left all by itself without a little head work, it's actually kind of dangerous. So if we use our heads to decide what's real, we use our hearts to decide what's important. Ideally, if we're brought up in loving, caring relationships, we come to be able to care for other people. It comes from our hearts. So what about this thing we call spirit? Because that's really not just an emotion, and it's certainly not about facts. I mean, if you've got the facts on God, let me know. People have tried to study spirit from all sorts of different angles. There are meditators who look at altered states of consciousness. There are people who study things like the stages involved in faith. I think that spirit is the part of us that asks the questions about meaning. Why are we here? Why does this God that we talk about being loving allow things like cancer? What is it that I can do in the world? God knows there is a lot of suffering right now. What can one person do? Spirit for me has always been a source of strength. There have been lots of times in my life, medical conditions, all sorts of stuff, where I come up against the edges of what I can do. And maybe it's just a fantasy of mine. But you know, acting like I believe that spirit is there, it comes out well. And if that's fantasy, I'm going to live there. If that's not sanity, I'm not sure I'm worried about that. This is that other kind of knowing again. How about the most powerful being, a blend of those three, where we get to link meaning and heart and mind? What if that's what we're asked to grow into? What if that's what coming out of childhood thinking is actually about? I kind of think that's it. So how does all this apply to class? Well, class this year for me got vivid in a way that it hadn't before. Now, I've been in classes before, and I've had some people's relatives come through me before. And my form of experiencing spirit is about feeling. So, oh my goodness, your great aunt Mildred comes through me. Now, I don't get a name. I don't happen to know it's your great aunt Mildred. Usually that's Millie's job. Oh, it's great aunt Mildred. Okay. But I get the feelings that great aunt Mildred has for you. If she loves you, oh my God. I feel passionately warm and thrilled to be in your presence. And you know what? I didn't walk into the room that way. So that seems to be one of the most ordinary experiences in these classes. Not to write it off as unimportant. Do you know how good it feels to know that somebody you've loved and lost still loves you? And to have facts come through that confirm that that really is the somebody? The first circle that was like that for me, Jody, you were in. It was up at Harmony Grove. You and your husband, I think, were there. And you guys brought through my grandfather. And my grandfather isn't important enough that you could look up facts about him and who's who anywhere. Jody and Vincent, I don't remember which one it was of you, said to me, who's the guy under the fluorescent lights who could fix anything? You couldn't give me a better thumbnail sketch of my grandfather, one of them. The other one couldn't fix anything. I love them both differently. If you tried. And Millie calls that experience, when you have it for the first time, coming to know that you know. That's on the receiving end. Okay. But I'm sitting in class sometimes this year, and your aunt or your grandmother comes through. Sometimes somebody male comes through. That's a little different. But what about the ones who haven't been relatives? That happened this year as well, and that was a much more different experience. We had classes where some of us felt the experience of turning into something like a standing stone, like Stonehenge. Have you ever tried to communicate what it's like to be a rock? But it's not any rock. We think of rocks as inert. This had rock guardian, solid, unmovable over time, and not even a perception of time. Time didn't matter. That's not an ordinary experience. That's right into the realm of the mystery. And that's part of the I don't know. I can try. I can give you my best shot at trying to describe it, but I'm not going to get it in whole. I'm going to get it in part, but I'm going to try. How about having somebody's Indian guide come through? Red, you're here. I think I saw you earlier. There we go. Hi. It's the squint. Now I see you. When Sequoia decided to come through, there was another energy. And this had a wisdom and a depth and a size that I knew had nothing to do with me. Why does spirit come through me and not you? Why does spirit come through at all? I don't know. But I'm curious. Maybe spirit comes through because those of us who are reaching to expand consciousness and knowing, maybe it feels good for them to reach us. Can you imagine trying to reach us? You know, we must remind them of kindergartners on speed to get us to slow down enough to perceive something, much less to communicate it, much less to make sense out of it. And, you know, I think they are as patient and loving with us as those of us who are good nursery school teachers are with kids. They don't expect more than that of us. But what does it mean that spirit reaches for us? I don't know, but I'm going to keep asking. Okay, so we've got spirit guides, we've got rocks. What about some of the holy figures who come through, you know, every year around Christmas time? We get an energy that looks or sounds or feels a lot like Jesus. I have chills talking about that now. What does that mean? When somebody who is that high a teacher and that sacred a being tries to come through. Well, remember that Bible that says we can do anything he did? That came from him. That's a quote. Don't you know that you are God's? Well, if we're taking him up on that, then it's not outrageous if he comes through. It's not outrageous at all that we who are also made of clay have spirit as well. We are clay and spirit combined. And so spirit coming through and using us makes some sense. As long as we don't try to define it tightly. Why do these figures come to class? Do you know? More on that later, I guess. There is a pleasure in reaching for them and having them reach back. And I don't think the task is to be able to define them tightly. I think that's the whole point of this talk. Why do I call it the sacrament of I don't know? The Episcopal Church that I grew up in defines sacrament as the outward and visible sign of an inward and spiritual grace. Well, spirit coming through is a pretty outward and visible sign of something that feels very distinctly spiritual happening. But so is the right to say, I don't know. I have come far enough from childhood where I don't have to be able to define things. One of the reasons I'm not a happily practicing clinical psychologist is that a PhD in psychology requires a research orientation. That means you believe you can objectively measure anything. Have you guys ever tried to measure love? Or what heals somebody from a lifelong severe depression? Or spirit? You know, all the things I'm interested in. Partly probably because I come from a family where I grew up with a dad who was a surgeon. Surgeons don't believe in it if they can't see it. If it's not under an x-ray or reported as a blood level on a test, it's not real. Well, guess who's a little reactive over here? I got the other half of the formula. If you can see it under an x-ray, I don't care. We're just going to come at this healing thing from slightly different angles. For me to get to the place where it's safe to be curious, it's safe to open, it's safe to wonder and not to know is indeed a sacrament. It is the presence of God, loose and at work in my life. You have brought the safety. I could not do it if I did not trust you. If you didn't share your stories, your wonders, your findings, your freeze-ups on the platform, all of it goes into making this both safe and a miracle. And I am very deeply grateful. Before I finish today, I want to go back and read you that Corinthians quote one more time. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now, we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know, even as also I am known. Thank you.
Was that grand? And she wasn't sure that she was just ready for it to get up here and tell her thoughts. Then we all couldn't shut her up. Was that grand? That is wonderful. You know, and all it is, you know, us reaching out to each other. You know, we don't have to be the greatest speaker. I tell you what, she's a good speaker. Whoa! But her thoughts are so wonderful. Geez, they were just grand, and she's just a good kid. Our Katie. Oh wow. Who's here?